As we wrap up this study about unity and Christ Church, Paul is spending a lot of time, and so we are spending a lot of time on the topic in Romans 14 and 15. And he begins by talking about eating of meats, and some didn't, some did. The meat eaters realized it was a liberty of theirs. The non-meat eaters thought it was idolatry, and so they were condemning or judging those that did eat and were going to have nothing to do with them. So divisions were entering the church over not which was forbidden, but which was optional, which was a real Christian liberty. But to them who think it's wrong, to them it's what? It's wrong. It is wrong. So we have to understand that. So the question is, how can you have unity with such differences of faith? And Paul says, just accept one another. You say, well, how are you going to accept one another? I thought faith mattered. Are we going to compromise the faith? Well, we've been looking at the solution to it, and we really need to review, but I'm not going to spend all the time review except for a couple things. But we finished last week with these thoughts. There are certain things we have to agree on because they affect the collective activity of the church. And we'll use an example in a little bit about worship, because we see in the New Testament they did do certain things in their worship. Now, always there's a change agents or people honestly asking, why can't we do this as well? And they want to add to the worship. And those are good questions, but do they affect the whole collective activity of the church when you add something to it? Immediately, right? And so how are we going to deal with those questions? And we'll have to deal with that in a second. There are other things that never affect the collective body. They only affect the individual. In fact, that's the largest part of your life, isn't it? It's your individual life. They're personal matters. And if you're wrong, who do you have to give an account to? To God. And that's why he says, anyone that lives, he lives for Christ. And if he dies, he dies for Christ. Because all things are for Christ. And we're all going to have to give an account of ourselves to God. And that's there in Romans 14 in the middle of that section there. And then we left off with this idea, for lack of better words, there is primary offenses when it comes to things God says don't do. And then there are our secondary offenses, and that's where we have disagreement. And I want to finish that discussion because that's where we have to be cemented in our mind of what Paul is dealing with, so we can spiritually have the spiritual emotion necessary. It's tough to accept someone who you think is going to hell, right? How are you going to do that? It's going to come in understanding two things. There's collective things and there's private things. And there's primary offenses and there's secondary offenses. And if you understand, we're not promoting any kind of sin. And that's why it says they thought you're promoting idolatry by eating meats. No, we're all against idolatry. The question is eating meats idolatry? And so that's the issue, because eating meats is not a primary offense at best, is it? At best, if it is idolatry, on what level would it be? Secondary. You understand what I mean by secondary? And you say, well, I don't. Well, let's look at it again. Remember, we talked about Starbucks. They promote homosexual agenda. So some Christians with good faith, good conscience, say you cannot buy a Starbucks because if you do, you're promoting not Starbucks, but homosexuality, all right? Now, the truth is, it's just what? It's just coffee. That's exactly right. It's just a cup of coffee. But if your conscience doesn't allow you, what does Paul admonish you to do? Don't buy their coffee, all right? Could you do it out of a preference? I'm not going to buy their coffee, not because I think it's sin, but because I just don't feel good about it and I'm going to protest. Is that your right? Now, there's a difference between a preference and a conviction. A conviction says what? I can't budge. I have to do this because the Lord said do it. And I can't do this because the Lord said don't ever do it. Right? What's a preference? Yeah. You want to go out to pizza? Yeah. Well, what do you want to have on your pizza? And any answer you give me is going to be what? A preference. Okay? Preferences are fluid. They can change. They're neither right or wrong. Now, it's interesting. Can people be very passionate about their preferences? Can they be evangelistic about them? Oh, you got to try Canadian bacon and Hawaiian, you know. You got it. It's the best. And if you're going to get it, you got to get it from Paddington's, right, Barbara? Paddington's pizza has the best crust there is. And can you be very evangelistic about your preference?
Yes.
So it almost smells like, feels like, sounds like a conviction. Yeah. In fact, we kind of delude ourselves sometimes. We think, well, it has to be this way. No, it doesn't. It's just pizza. Get over it, right? But does that spill over into other areas? Well, that's what we're going to try to talk about here. So we looked at homosexuality. Starbucks is not, some people say it is, but see, it's not a primary offense. You're not sleeping with a person, right, of the same sex. You're just drinking coffee. Some people connect the dots and say it is, but the truth is really it's not. But we talked about a website. Remember, if you had a website just for homosexuality agenda, well, that's a step closer, and I would think that surely is connected to it, right? But how about Ecclesiastes says, when a man lies with a man, they both can keep warm. That's okay? Well, it says in Leviticus 20, if you find a man lying with a man, stone him. Is there a difference?
Yes.
Yeah, one is a sexual act. This is what? It's cold out here. We got to stay alive, right? Some shepherd, someone said, sleep with their dog at cold nights. You know, it's just to stay warm, all right? So I do that not to be silly, but to see there's different levels, all right? And so when it comes to idolatry, we know bowing down to an idol is wrong. It's always wrong. Worshiping idols as though they have some power in your life is wrong. Rubbing a rabbit's foot, and no one ever does that anymore, but a lot of people have St. Christopher's around their neck. Isn't it the guardian saint of protection? Yeah. And then they rub it when they're in trouble. Does that smell like idolatry?
Yeah.
Is this somehow this saint, which is not a saint, but is somehow going to protect you? No, who's the only one you worship as your protector, as your yeah, God our Father and Jesus, who's Lord of Lords and King of Kings. So, but does Paul say covetousness is idolatry? Yeah, he does. Now, where does covetousness take place? Is it this kind of idolatry that you're physically bowing down and offering a sacrifice? No, it's in the heart, and it's seen maybe by greed and other things, but is it very difficult to convict someone of it? That's the word I'm looking for, convict. I mean, if you found someone bowing down and offering animal sacrifice to an idol, would that be easy to convict them of idolatry? Huh? I heard a no. Oh, yes, it would be, right? But how would you convict someone of covetousness? That'd be very, 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 very difficult. But is it still wrong? Yes.
They have a mindset that says, this helps me to get closer to God. Because when I look at it and I say to myself, well, see, I have this and it just helps me spiritually to think more of Him. Same thing with some of the idols that they use, that they have. It helps them with a visual. We heard that the other day. But that's a mindset, and what they don't realize is God condemns, he condemned it and said, you're not to have any idols before.
Period. Period. Yeah.
And so
it's wrong.
It's
yeah.
A mindset that has to be dealt with through the scriptures.
But, and I just want you to see, covetousness is idolatry, but it's on another level, right? Now, eating meats, is it idolatry? We already know from our study it's not. But do some people think it is?
Yeah.
They connect the dots and say it's just as bad it is. It's just a lesser form. They'll agree it's a lesser form. But see, that's where the problem is. The discussion and the dispute and the division is not on this level. It's on this level. You with me? Same thing with modern day Christmas trees, things like that. They think it's a pagan holiday, and so you can't have one. So the last one, you know, is adultery. Deuteronomy 22 and 22. If you find someone lying with someone other's wife, you're supposed to stone them, right? That was the civil law under the nation of Israel. It required what? Two witnesses, okay, because this is a death penalty. So, and we see that the same type of admonition is given to us in chapter 6 and chapter 5, that as Christians, we're not supposed to hold hands or have fellowship with those who are known practicing adulterers or idolaters, for that matter, or homosexuals, right? You can't have association with them. You know, accept them as a brother when they're practicing willfully, you know, these lifestyles. We don't stone them, but he says you can't accept them. That's what Paul says. Well, so we're all agreeing on this level, right? Because you know what adultery looks like. But the question is, down on this level, it's hard to see adultery. Now, Jesus says, when you lust after a woman in your heart, you have what? Now, is that a new form of adultery, or is it still adultery? It's not a new form. It's what?
Sin.
It's adultery. Now, if you committed the sexual act in your heart, but have you physically?
No.
Would you if you could? Yes. I think that's what it suggests. And so you've already made the choice in your mind, and all sin starts where? In the heart. Could you ever stone someone for lusting if you were a Jew and under the old law?
No.
No, there's just no way. Where are you going to get your two witnesses? No one knows anyone's heart. So it's still an offense, but it's on what? A secondary level, but it's just as dangerous, perhaps even more so, because it's so hidden. All right? Yes.
At least those two examples, the covetousness and the lusting, it's like those two almost seem to be brought up by Jesus in this exact same kind of circumstance.
That's right. That's right.
So stop worrying about the secondary,
yeah. They were doing that. And he used the example of murder. He says, you've heard it said, thou shalt not murder. That's right. We have murdering one. It says, you're guilty of murder yourself because they did what? They hated. That's where murder starts. Then he uses exactly this one, like you're saying. They were splitting hairs. Well, we never commit adultery, but we lust. Well, you're still as bad. So exactly. So, now, this one, does this issue have a lot of controversy in the church? Probably more so than a lot of these others.
Yeah.
And you say, what are you talking about, remarriage? I'm talking about when someone is divorced for cause, and now they're no longer married, can they remarry or not? Now, is the brotherhood split on this issue? Now, if you go to a denomination, because I've looked and listened to a lot of their debates, they fight the same question. And you look back through hundreds of years of church history, they've always been fighting this issue or arguing about it. And there's equally honest men on both sides that disagree. All right? You with me? Some say for that person to remarry, it's what? Adultery. And they'll quote the verse. Others say, no, it's not. At best, this is not a primary offense. What is it?
Secondary.
A secondary. You say, well, what do you mean secondary? Because they're not married to their former person, and now they're married to someone else. They're not committing adultery in the classic sense. Right? You with me? At best, if it's wrong, it's at this wrong. So the problem, the question is, how are we going to deal with all these issues that divide us? And we're generally never divided on this level. You with me? Usually the controversy comes where? Right on this level. And what does Paul say? If it affects the collective, don't. But if it's a private individual matter, stop judging. Whether you have a Christmas tree in your house is none of the church's business, is it? I'm talking about the collective church. They have no right to say and decide for you what you're going to do in that matter. And if you're wrong, you'll go to hell and stand in judgment based on your own actions and your own faith. No more than the church has any right to to tell anyone in this congregation, you can't go to Starbucks. I mean, who wants to start writing those laws for the church and every Christian here on every issue that comes up? Yeah. All I'm saying is there's certain areas we don't have a right to dictate what people must do. Now, should we teach principles, godly principles of Christian living? Avoiding the appearance of evil, being a good example, a good steward. We're going to talk about some of those that are less than our sermon coming up. Yeah, absolutely, we have to equip people so they can discern between good and evil. That's Hebrews chapter 6 or 5, where Paul, the Hebrew writer, if it is Paul, says, I have many more things to say about Jesus being the high priest according to Melchizedek, but I can't. Because you become what? Dull of hearing. And by this time, you ought to be teachers, but now you need to be taught all over again. Because you're in need of not solid food, but milk. Because milk is for babes, right? But he says solid food is for the mature who, what does it say? Because of practice what? Using the word. Have their senses trained. And interesting, this is something, a spiritual judgment that you acquire through maturity using God's word over and over and over, and you can discern good and evil. The immature cannot make that discernment. And Paul says that in 1 Corinthians 3. You know, the spiritual judges all things, and the carnal don't judge at all. We have the ability to with use. Now, I'm going to give you an example. Is modesty enjoined upon all of us by God? Yes. So what is modesty? Wayne.
I look at modesty as being century specific.
Okay.
It depends on what point of time society is in.
Okay, can I say culturally sensitive rather than, is it somewhat culturally defined?
Absolutely.
All right. You said what?
What's something that usually draws attention to yourself. So an example that we have a hard time with is thinking is if I was to wear a tuxedo to the beach.
Yes. Tuxedo to the beach, did you hear that?
Even though we don't think of that being immodest because it's not right. It's not a lusting flesh appearance.
All right.
Draw attention to yourself, possibly for the wrong reason.
All right.
The intention is important and where you're at and what, and like Wayne said, the culture of the time.
All right. Okay, good. He's exactly right. The word modest comes from the word we get cosmetics from, and cosmetics means cosmos, and cosmos means the world, and that word means well-ordered. When God created the heavens and the earth, he ordered things. He made that which is disordered, and he put perfect order, right? So when women are putting cosmetics on, they're putting order to their disordered face. Did I say that? They're out of order face. All right, I'm not going to go there. That's where cosmetics come from. It's true. And guys don't care. We're always out of order, you know. So the word, what's the word we're talking about? Modesty is the same word cosmos comes from it. It means well-ordered. And unmodest is out of order. We usually think of it in the sexual realm, but it's really any dress or behavior that's out of order. And that's why in 1 Timothy 2 and 1 Peter 3, he's talking about don't let your attire be mainly, and in their day, they'd pile all sorts of things up in their hair, fruit and gold and things, because you showed rich and wealth, and it was just really exorbitant. And he says, stop it. Because you're just trying to stand out and draw attention to yourself like you're special. All right? Now, is there anything wrong with being special? Because we're all special in God's eyes. But when you try to do it just for the purpose of drawing attention, you're out of order. All right? So, and going back to Wayne's comment, there was a day if you showed your ankles, you were immodest because that was sexually provocative. Now, how many women have a dress on to their ankles now here today? Anybody? When's the last time you wore one? I'm sorry?
Close to my ankles.
Wow, it is. Good job, Eva. Now, does that mean all the other women are sinning?
No.
Because does that change? You say, well, I'm confused because sometimes the world goes south and it's still wrong and we shouldn't change with them. That's true. Let me give another example. There was a time in our culture for women to wear men's clothing was sinful. And the clothing I'm speaking of is wearing pants. They didn't wear men's pants. They wore slacks, right? That's what you call them, slacks, right? I hope. They didn't wear men's clothing from the men's department. They had women's slacks, and they were nice and dressy. But the first time women started doing that, that was immodest. It was out of order. It was to draw attention to yourself. And it wasn't appropriate in certain, public. Huh?
Circles.
Yeah.
Public circles.
Yeah, public. Yeah, especially worship services. Now, so Christians don't lead the change. Would be the first one to wear pants, the first one to wear skirts. But you necessarily don't hold everyone back and be the trail in. Say, no, none of you can either, right? Say, so we got to go back to the Victorian days where it's down to the ankle and no pants at all. But if that's where you are, fine, right? Because it's a personal matter. But can you be immodest today? Can you stand out of attention? What if someone came in a bridal gown to services, just a flowing train 10 feet long? Would that be out of order? You know, so what are you doing? Well, I just feel like dressing up today. No, please. Now, honest, we had in Kirkland, a lady came and sat on the front row, Coeur d'Alene, excuse me, and our realtor friend, we'd been trying to get him to come services, he wouldn't come services. Finally, what's his name? Clyde came to services. He sat on that row, and this lady came in on that row, and it looked like she'd been working all night. Fish stockings, really skimpy attire. You know what I mean, working all night. I didn't know her, never seen her before. And she sat there. Was she immodestly dressed? Totally. He thought, wow, what a group they have here. And I said, I'm glad you're here, because you're where you need to be. And if it caused too much distraction, we could give her a shower or something, I don't know. But I had to have a talk with him. You know, not everyone's there, are they? They don't understand it. They don't understand proper Christian living. And that she needed to be right there on the front row. We're glad she was there. Now, over time, do you get your senses trained to discern between good and evil? I've heard that story more and more. Without anyone saying anything, women that sometimes come out of the world are sexually immodest, but just being around and learning, all of a sudden everything changes about their behavior and their dress and everything. And they get it because of this scripture right here. In the meantime, do we just castigate them or just judge them? And that has happened too. People take a bad tone towards them and run them off because of their immature behavior. Is it immature? Yes, but what do babes do? Immature things, all right? Yes.
Just get off the women. We had a young man came to in Montana. He came to church on a pretty regular basis in cutoffs and holy t-shirts and and he was converted. And eventually now he wears a suit to church. You know, it's just
there you go. Yeah.
But it took a while.
Yeah. Just like all our husbands, right? Takes a while sometimes. All right, I kind of got off, but I just wanted you to see that there's primary things, and sometimes it's hard. It's hard. Now, what I was saying, that there's certain areas where, though, the church doesn't have a right to start dictating. That's what I was going to conclude with. Do you want to write a manual on how high a hemline should be on a lady? Do you know what I'm asking? Now, I guess some colleges do and some private schools do, but they have a right to do that. But as a church, do you want to have a standard, you know, at the knee, 1 inch below, 1 inch above, 2 inches above, and are you going to get a ruler when they come through the door? But that's the attitude of some people. It's really difficult, though, on these things. Yes?
I was going to say, in high school, the girls used to have to kneel on the floor.
Yes.
And if their skirt didn't touch the floor.
You're going home. And actually, we should go back to some of those days, but I'm serious. Now, here's a quote, and I'll use it again in the lesson. Often, fellowship between Christians becomes strained when a practice one group of believers finds perfectly acceptable shocks another. Their first thought is, how could a true dedicated Christian do that? And it creates first hesitancy, then suspicion, then a spirit of judgmentalism, and then division in the church. Those with differing outlooks may be one in Christ, but cracks develop in their unity over the issues that divide them. Is this serious? And it's usually, again, on these secondary levels. Like, how could you eat meat, you heathens? See, that's what they're thinking. So the solution, again, as I'm suggesting, is understanding that they're on a secondary level on their private issue. Now, I have to ask this question again to go back and recenter so we don't go too far one way or the other. Are there times we have to take a stand for the faith, the truth? Absolutely. Are there other times we'd accept differences? Yes, okay, we'll try to illustrate the difference between the two of them. So let's go and look at instruments in worship. When you look at the denominational world, the large majority of them use musical instruments as accompaniment to their singing. And actually, it's gone to the point the singing accompanies now the musical instruments. You with me? It's totally flipped. And there's a lot of material being written in the denominational world. You can read it on the internet. And I'll just say, hey, this has gone too far. We got to pull back. I think that's why at the singing that Marvin puts on, there's upwards of 1,000 people that come just because they want to hear a cappella singing. And a cappella means what? From the chapel. It's literally. Because in the origin of the early church, singing that came from the chapel was always without instruments. And that's why it means without instruments today. But there's a lot of people that want to make instrumental music okay. And yet a lot of people say, no, it's forbidden by God. Did it divide the Lord's church? Yes. From that came the Christian church back in the 50s over this issue centrally. They went instruments, the Church of Christ, non-instruments. And sometimes you get people call, are you a non-instrumental church? I know what they're asking, but you know, we use our voice. No, I know. I don't say that because I don't want to confuse the waters, but I understand what they're asking. Now, let me just ask you this. At best, is instruments a must be?
No.
Do you have to use a piano or something to worship God with?
No.
And I've only found one occasion where someone argued that. And they argue from the word solo, which means to pluck, and they say it demands the use of an instrument. But I won't even go there. Most everyone that wants to introduce instruments into the worship say, well, it's a liberty. It's an option. All right? I put it over here, and it may never be, because the scripture's silent on it. There's no authority for it. And the church records of the history of the church show they never used it. And so I think you can build a strong case that God wants us to sing, because that's what it says. Sing with your hearts. All right? But at best, it's right there. It's optional. You with me? For the sake of argument, you can't put it there. It's at best there or there. Now, since I would put it over as it may never be, what does that make me, according to Romans 14?
He is one that judges?
Yes. So what does Paul call me? The weak brother. I'm not going to take that status. I'm not a weak brother. I know more than you, and you're wrong. No, no, no. I'll gladly take the weak status of the weaker brother. Because isn't it the weaker brother that says eating meats is wrong? He puts it over here. I have to admit, maybe I'm wrong. Okay, I'm going to take the weaker brother. So, if you want to use instruments in your worship at your home and all that, guess what I'm going to say? Nothing. I'm going to stop judging you because that's a private matter, and I have no business judging you because that's God's job. But when you want to take your instruments and move it into the congregation, now it's not a private matter. What is it? It's a collective issue. And now, since my conscience says it's wrong, when you introduced an instrument and I'm sitting there and say, let's sing, I can't sing. Because Romans 14, 23 says, whatever's not of faith is sin, and he who doubts if he eats or sings, sins. Now you have taken your preference, because now, is it a conviction? We have to do it? It's a preference. I'd like to do it. It would make it better. I enjoy it. Preference. And you're binding your preference on everyone. You see it? And that's always sinful. When you take your preference and you lord it over someone else, you bind it on them and you cause them to stumble. So if they do sing, they're sinning. And if they leave, they're sinning because now they can't work. You've divided the church. So now that which was a good thing for you has become what? Sinful. Not because in your mind it was sinful to use it, it's because how you abused it. See the difference? I hope that's clear. Now, I'm not arguing the instruments are correct, but I'll give you that argument. We've worshiped with people that thought instruments were okay in the worship, but they said, we're going to take the mature view. We understand what you're saying here, and for us to introduce them or ask for them or demand them would split the church, and we're not going to do that because it's not worth it. Because we can all what? We can all sing. And we had harmony in that group. And it was it my job to correct him on his doctrine at that given moment? No. Can I fellowship with him and have partnership? Yes. Because he's taken a mature attitude of how dealing with his preference. Now, did we have discussions and talk about it from Scripture? Yes. But until we got to a unity of the faith, could we still have unity and fellowship? Yes. Do you see the difference? All right. Yes. We all sang. Who's asked that? Yeah. We just didn't have instruments.
If you felt that strongly about it and an instrument came in, were you able to?
I couldn't. Because my conscience wouldn't allow me. And it's not that the sin, I want you to see, is not in bringing the instrument in. The sin is you divided the church. The sin is you've alienated your brethren from worshiping God. That's the sin. Not because you think it's okay. Your sin is because of what you did. Does that make sense? Now I'm going to another one. At best, it's a liberty, but I have to give it up if it's going to cause division. There's a lot of people, churches, that think it's okay to have a secular school under the administration and the authority of the elders in the church. And when I say a secular school, I'm talking about a school. It's interesting. A Christian secular school. Is that an oxymoron? Christian secular. When I say secular, I mean teaching ABCs, reading, writing, arithmetic, not Bible things. And the argument is this, that isn't it better for Christians to be taught by Christians than send them to a worldly, ungodly school? And my answer is yes. Isn't it better, since there are kids, that we take responsibility for our own kids and raise them up in a right way in the Lord, and that includes in our minds their education in the world, rather than give that responsibility to someone else? And my answer is what? Yes. The next question they don't ask, is it the right thing for the church to take over that job? My answer is what? No. Because you don't see it in Scripture anywhere. It's all about spiritual education, right? That's all the function and the work of the church is about, without exception. But there are a lot of people who take a difference with that, an exception, and they think, no, it is an option, a liberty for the church to do. And so you'll see a lot of places with school buildings and then gymnasiums, and they have parking lots full of people, children. Now, you got to hear me. Am I against raising your children, you know, or teaching your children in a Christian environment? Yes. No. Is that wholesome and helpful? Yes. My issue is with what? You tell me.
Making it the church.
A work of the church. All right. At best, is it required by God? No. At best, it's a liberty, right? But they say, well, you know, we're all members here. We have kids and we have a building. Let's use it for it. And you don't have to send your kids to it. You don't have to participate. Now, it's interesting. When we pass the collection plate around, and you drop money in it, and you drop money, and you drop money, and you drop money, and I drop money. So whether you send your children to that school during Monday through Friday, is your money supporting that school?
Yes.
It's not? It is. My money is supporting the work of the church, and now the church is teaching ABCs to kids. See? It's hiring people. It's paying for the facilities. It's building gymnasiums. We had a congregation that in Coeur d'Alene, we spent weeks trying to unite. And one of the issues was their Christian, quote, school they had under the authority of the elders. And they had it here, and we understood it was over here. And we said, listen, I'd love to send my kids to your school. If we united one congregation under one building, we'll sell our building to your school for $1. You got that? Because we don't need it. We're going to be worshiping in your building. We'll sell you our building for $1. Then the school can use it, and then we can all go to your school. Does that seem like a practical solution to a preference? Now we can all get involved, and we don't violate anyone's conscience. And you know what they said? No. We want to do it, and we're going to run it, and if you don't like it, that's the way it is. They further said, we want to build a gymnasium for it. We want to enlarge it. I said, well, why don't you? Because there's no authority. I was hoping they'd say that. They said, no, because we know it would split the church. Well, that's interesting. They were applying Romans 14 on the gymnasium. Because they realize the church, they push the limits with them, but when you build a gym, they go, that's it. You've gone too far now. And it would split them, but they say, we would if we could, but since it's going to split the church, we won't. Well, why don't you use that same reasoning when it comes to the whole school? Do it in such a way that we all can be part of it. Now, here's my next statement I want to make. All these issues in this area that divide us could all be done a different way, which we all can be part of, and there'd be no division. Without exception. Sometimes it's eating the building and social events. Can you do a social event outside of the building? Can you rent halls? Can you have it in your home?
Yes.
We do that. And can we do more and better job of it? Yes. But sometimes people say it's my preference we do it in the building. Whatever, because it's ease and comfort. Exactly. It's easier and it's more comfortable. Well, this really isn't comfortable for a social setting. So they say we need to build another room for it. We already have the property. But then it, what it does is end up splitting the church. Now, that split happened also. After the Christian church split from the Lord's church, then you have the church splitting into two. Into one is more, we call it, they're institutional. They have a lot of programs they do that are outside the framework of the Lord's church. And then there are others that would reject that. And Christ says, I pray that they might be what?
One.
It's so sad, the division, and it's only because of a preference. Only because of a preference. When it could have been done another way where we all could be united. The greater sin is in the division, not because you wanted to teach your kids. Does that make sense? All right. Any questions? I've talked a lot, but I tried to give you two good examples to illustrate what we're talking about. Yes?
I was just going to add that I think it's important that Hop's point that there are those situations where you can't again go as an individual. So you were just talking about things that others that are doing outside of the
right. Good point. I don't know if you heard that. There might be activities during the week, put on by who, it doesn't really matter. One person might say, I feel comfortable going there, and another Christian would say, no, I wouldn't be comfortable going there. So what would be our advice to that person that's uncomfortable?
Don't go.
And what would we say about the guy that's comfortable?
Have a great time.
Go. And what would we say about him talking to him? Don't judge him, right? And what would we say to him? Don't you have, what's the word? Contempt for his weak, his position, right? Right.
And any sound group of Christians that meet are always going to be working through those things. It's just a matter of where you make the judgment.
That's right.
So you may, what if I'm sitting right here eating my lunch while you're up there preaching? Well, you know, that's going to offend people. It's going to offend
yes.
you. You may talk to me, but maybe I'm okay to eat my lunch in my car or somewhere
right.
else on the premises because I'm here all day and I have
that's right.
to eat.
Yeah, it's not what you're doing. It's how we do it often. That's right. And where you're doing it and what the timing. That's right. So, anything else? Well, I'm going to stop early. Can you believe that? Because if you introduce that, you're actually causing that brother to stumble in sin. You are. And that's the greater sin. And so Paul says, give up your liberty. At best, it's liberty. I don't think it is, but I'll take the position of the weaker brother. Okay? So remember, always ask yourself, is this a matter of absolute truth that I have to do it? You know, and what I mean by that, I must be or may never be? Because we have to take a stand in there. Or is it a matter of personal conviction or a personal preference? It's sad that so many divisions take place right in this area there about preference. All right? And so we have to always ask, what if my action, the bottom line, is it going to glorify God? That's really what it is. If my action causes someone to stumble or causes dissension or causes division, have I glorified God? No. You say, well, you mean I have to give up things? Yes. Isn't that what Paul said? I'll never eat meat or drink wine or do anything, he says, that causes my brother to stumble. And that's the last one here. Never. Eat meat, drink wine, or do anything. That anything includes everything he hasn't talked about. Yes, because that's what Christ did for us. And so that's Romans 14 about accepting one another. All right. Thank you very much. We'll pick up a little bit this in our sermon.